welcome one and all once again to a very special episode of Dual Wielding for the week of February the 16th, 2015. I am joined this week by Jason.
Hello.
And Daniel.
Hello.
So I think this will be an interesting week in the sense that a lot of what we're going to talk about isn't necessarily a game news. It's more like game and culture and game of perspectives, I guess. This has kind of been brought up enough times. I just kind of want to talk about it because I know Daniel watched it as well. Leonardo SVU did an episode related to Gamergate this week called Imitation Game, is it? No.
Yeah, Something like that.
Sounds about right.
It was a... the funny thing is, I don't necessarily know if it was... I mean, I guess it's SVU, so it doesn't matter. I don't know if it was pro or anti-Gamergate by the end of it, because the moral of the story seems to have been to give up.
They tried to sort of say... they tried to sort of walk the line as if to say, we don't want to piss off the people that are angry in either direction.
So, yeah, we're just kind of frame... Like, I mean, this is something that they do. They kind of... I mean, you know, like they sometimes say it's news ripped straight from the headlines. And they'll take stories and they'll kind of make it their own. And you have to have a certain twitch to it because it is Special Victims Unit, which is mostly rape and murder. In this case, we got rape. And yeah. It was weird because the rape kind of took a back seat. Like, not even halfway through the episode because... The person who was raped didn't seem to have a big deal with it because she was so concerned about getting her game out. Well, not her game, the boss's game. And then the boss became the focus of it, and then she got kidnapped and all this other stuff. I would just say this much. It's kind of your typical Leonardo episode. I guess people just paid special attention to it because it was focused on the gaming community, and it was curious to see how they kind of portrayed that. And... I think, as a whole, the gaming industry has a long way to go in terms of how the mainstream industry views them. Because this was... I mean, literally, one of the characters plays video games in his mom's basement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, these are stereotypes. And, I mean, they exist for a reason, but it is kind of like, yeah, it's kind of, you know... Like, gaming has become more popular than ever, but we still kind of think of people who play consoles and PC games as this weird subset of humanity that isn't well adjusted or anything like that. I mean, the end sequence, which really, I mean, of all the things that the episode that I thought the end sequence was the most cringeworthy thing, because like, there's moments where it goes in the first person, like you see the person looking like a first person shooter because you just see the gun going up and down.
That's the thing that I had. The biggest problem I have with it is just like they talk about Ice-T talks about in the whole episode about how these criminals, they think that it's a game when it's not a game, and then they go and frame the shootout at the end as if it's a first person shooter, and it's like why do that if it's not a game, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And then the way that there are people that talk in acronyms. It's like, people don't talk like that.
Okay, that's something else I wanted to bring up. And this is something that... It's something that I think the computer industry or PC has as well. In that whenever you bring up certain stuff, people always speak in this lingo that nobody speaks of in real life. Like when they see the rape victim and they ask what happened, she's like, I guess they leveled up. Like, nobody says that. Ever.
Yeah.
And then there was, I forget what the other one was, something like, they don't get extra lives, or some really stupid, like, haha, this is stuff you get if you're a gamer, but it's like, no, nobody speaks like that in their actual life. Like, I don't even say leveled up when I'm playing a video game.
I don't know, it's really stupid, like, the whole thing.
Yeah, but again, it's kind of how, I don't necessarily mean like, but I assume this is how people's moms and dads think of the gaming industry. This is what they see and this is what they think of. You know, like, it's going to be, like, even if your kid does it, or, you know, even if you do it, it's like, oh, that's me, I'm different. This is how the gaming industry as a whole is. This is the people who play these types of games. And it's like, it's gonna take a lot of effort to kind of evolve past that image, and I don't think the industry as a whole is doing any favors to itself at all. I mean, part of the reason was this entire Gamergate thing, which just looks awful. And we're not going to talk about that. We've done a great job of avoiding it as much as possible. I would also say, I don't necessarily know how much you know about Law and Order before this, Daniel, because it's one of those, I don't know what you would call it.
I've seen a lot of it before, but it seems to sort of ham up everything that it does.
Well, not even that. I mean, it's kind of like this weird cultural touchstone for us, because you can literally, if you're ever home around the TV between like noon and like, say 8, you can pretty much turn on any channel and you will find a repeat of this show on. It's one of those shows, because, I mean, this is a spinoff of the actual show, and this is like, I mean, this is the most popular spinoff, but there's been 3 or 4 spinoffs of this. The show, it's 15th or 16th season. The original show ran for 20 years. So there's all these episodes that just kind of, it's always out there. So it's like one of these shows that's been a part of our culture for so long, but it's like nobody talks about it. It's just always around. We'll get to the other stuff when we actually get to news. A lot of it isn't negative. It's just, you know, we have a lot of movie news and some, I guess, TV news, stuff like that, all intermingled with our news for the week. But since we have not been around in 2 weeks, have you gentlemen been playing anything new?
Not new for me. I've been playing a bunch of old stuff this week.
I have played something, but I can't remember what it was.
Did nobody get evolved?
Nope.
Okay.
I can't remember what it was. If it was new and I was playing it, I can't remember.
The newest thing I've played was, I started Infamous First Light, and I had only played Second Son not very far, so I never got the neon power, which the main character in First Light uses. And it completely changes that game. It's actually a really fun game with that power, and I'm really enjoying that. And it's kind of cool that I could get just, I mean, it was like a plus game, but even if, you know, if someone had bought it, just like a $15 smaller chunk that's like actually digestible, you know?
Yeah. I've heard good things about it, too. Really good things. So if I ever, ever, ever in the deepest recesses of my mind get a PlayStation 4, I might look into it. Speaking of, I did pick up a PlayStation TV.
You did?
Yay! Congratulations, you're a Vita owner now.
That's the funny thing is, because Amazon had it on sale for like half off. I got the $50 bundle, which comes with the PlayStation TV, a PS3 controller, the Lego Movie get video game, and an 8 gig memory card, and it was for $50.
It's $50, you know.
Yeah. But then I bought it because it was such a good deal, and then I'm like, what the hell do I want to play on the Vita?
Well, not only is it what do you want to play on the Vita, but would you want to play on the Vita that's also compatible with the TV?
Yeah, because like, I would try Tearaway, not compatible. I would try the Uncharted game, not compatible. I'm sure there's probably some PlayStation Plus games I have for the Vita laying about, or some cross-buy games that I can do. But I'm like, yeah, this is one of those things which I bought for a good buy, and then I'm like, I might try Persona because everybody said good things about it, but I don't know if that's the type of RPG for me.
You should get Rogue Legacies on Plus right now on Vita.
That's probably what I'm gonna have to do, is just fill it up with a bunch of indie Vita games or instant game collection stuff. But it literally just came today, so I haven't even taken it out the box. I haven't opened it. I have to figure out what the hell I want to do, because my TV only has 3 HDMI ports, and I already use them for my Xbox One, my Wii U, and my cable.
What if you route one through the Xbox One?
Well, I was thinking
Yeah.
I was just thinking of getting a splitter, because then I can hook up my PS3 again. Because right now that's not hooked up, but it's still underneath my TV. And I have a brand new controller for it, so, you know, there's that. I've actually been playing an old game, but I've been playing New Super Mario Bros. 2. Because I did not buy it when it first came out.
I just recently bought that, too, I think the same time you did, and I still haven't played it.
Yeah, when it was on sale for like $10 at Best Buy during the
day.
Yeah. So I was like, let me play this because I needed some, like, Fire Emblem. I was going on a short trip, and Fire Emblem missions sometimes take too long. And it's an okay game, it's, I think I'm just kind of eh with that right now. I think because it's, especially with the new Super Mario games, they kind of do the same thing, like World 1 and 2, you know, the first world is just like a grassy world, the second one's a desert world, and they kind of do this thing where they show you ramp up the game so that you can get into it. And it's fine if there's been some time between them, but it's just like, yeah, I've kind of done this with New Super Mario Bros. U and New Super Luigi U recently, so it's kind of like, yeah. As you get further in the game, the levels get better and stuff like that, but it's like, again, why do you have to wait two and a half worlds before you start doing these interesting levels and stuff? And I think the other thing is, unlike any of the recent ones, there's like no real new power-ups. Like, the only thing you really get is the giant... Not that you get the gold fire flower, which lasts for the stage, and then you get rid of it. And that's the other thing. I don't get the gold gimmick at all. Like, it makes for some cool little, like, you know, trinkets where you get like a gold box in your head and you run around and then get coins every time you run and jump and stuff like that. But it just, I'm like halfway through World 5, I have like 175 lives. I don't know what the coins do. You don't need it to unlock levels or anything. So I'm just like, oh, it's a really random gimmick that I don't even know has a storyline purpose. And I know it's Mario. What does it need a storyline for? But it's just kind of there. There's like nothing that it adds to the game that I can see.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Shame.
Yeah. It's also a Care of Nintendo game if you're interested in that.
Not in Europe.
Not in Europe.
Sick.
Well, there's a lot of Care of Nintendo games, and I realized that I had a twofold problem. I own a lot of the games they offered because I have a ton of Care of Nintendo coins. So I had a ton of Care of Nintendo coins to burn and nothing to buy. I ended up buying Super Mario Bros. 3 for myself so that I can play it and make fun of Jason for not beating it yet.
I was just going to say, they should make a new Super Mario Bros. 3 just so I can not play that one either.
Well, New Super Mario Bros. 2 is basically that, since it does, I believe it was the first time that the Snooki suit returned, even though that would become a staple in the 3D and in world games. And I got somebody, a Link's Awakening, and then if you read our Twitter feed right now, by the time this is up, it will be over. I'm giving away the Wonderful 101 on Wii U, and I still have like 400 points, and this is without redeeming half of my games. So,
that's crazy.
Part of it is that I do buy out of games in general. Part of it is that I've always kind of saved up for that one thing that just never came. So I have points for like 3 or 4 years. And the other thing is I've always kind of been a sticker. So like once I hit platinum for every year, I would just stop because then I do it. So there's a lot of games that I have that just never went into the system because I wanted to wait into the next year. And since this is the final year, I'm just going to put those up. Or, if I get really lazy, I'll probably just give away the codes because I hate doing those surveys. But yes, I think that's it for what I've been playing, and I guess that's it for all of you folks. So, let's get to the news. We already talked about the On-Order episode. Hitman Agent 47 trailer came out this week. Did you folks get a chance to check that out?
I didn't.
I watched it and I was just like, this is probably just going to be a bad film like the last one.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it looks like it's a bad film in the right way. It looks like it's kind of the stupid over-the-top stuff that we get with the Fast and the Furious franchise. I don't know what they saw in the Hitman games for over-the-top action movie. I thought those were more stealth games, but they decided
that... You need to sell tickets at the end of the day.
Yeah, but you can sell, well, I guess it's hard to kind of sell stealth in a movie trailer. That wouldn't be really fun. Actually, I don't think stealth in general would be odd, because you don't often get, like, you'll get little segments, but an entire movie built around a hero who sneaks around. I mean, even a spy genre, which in theory should be a bunch of people who don't do anything, is built on action and, you know, suspense and stuff like that, and not necessarily the spy going or, like, it's one of the reasons people don't like Dr. No and From Russia with the Love. It's him just kind of walking around meeting people.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks interesting. It looks better than I thought it would. So I'm kind of curious to see how that is. It is what it is. It's the next major video game movie we have. And then I think after that is World of Warcraft, or is it just Warcraft?
Does that come out this year?
No, it comes out next March, I believe.
Warcraft,
there's that Assassin's Creed movie, too.
But I was going to get to that, because that cast, I'm going to butcher her name.
Marion Cotillard?
Yeah, there we go. Who's probably most well-known for appearing in Christopher Nolan's Inception and The Dark Knight Rises as Talia al Ghul. She's also an Academy Award winner. And I think a huge get for this movie. I think that she's a caliber of actress that we probably not necessarily haven't seen in it, because Angelina Jolie had a pretty big resume, and well, I guess Gemma Arterton didn't have as big of a resume. But, I mean, it also depends, because I would have said the same thing last year with the Need for Speed movie, which had
Aaron Paul
from Breaking Bad in it. And but, you know, like, in theory, I mean, Michael Fassbender is a very solid actor. She's a very solid actress. It has a pretty decent director.
And it's also it's the kind of game that has a lot of material that could make a great movie. I think that's the most important thing. Like, a movie on Need for Speed, you know, just like, what is that going to be about? How is that going to represent the game?
Well,
but
I
it's very easy to see how a game like Assassin's Creed could be turned into a movie.
Yeah, but at the same time, you can literally see, like, Need for Speed influenced the Fast and the Furious franchise, and that is a blockbuster franchise now. Like, you should have just taken inspirations from that or something. I honestly have not seen a Need for Speed movie yet, so I can't say what it did right or wrong.
Me neither.
But I have seen enough of these films to kind of tell you that I don't have high expectations for a ton of them. And I think that Hitman is going to continue that legacy for me, in that it's a film that I can enjoy in my special way, which is me getting really hammered and kind of half deaf with it, instead of kind of being bored to death, instead of being a generally good movie where I can recommend it. And I would say this is kind of going through the similar growing pains that comics went through, but even comics started much higher than these did, because I guess it was also a different time out of the comic book stuff started with serials, but like, even going back to like, the Superman film, that is a film that 30 years later people still remember fondly. I don't necessarily know if everybody goes back and watch it and enjoys it as much, because it is really a slow burn, but it was a film that was well regarded in its day and still kind of continues that legacy. Where I don't think, like, you know, like, I've seen Street Fighter, I've seen Mortal Kombat, and you can always say, like, you should watch it, but... And the caveat is usually, it's not a good movie. It's entertaining. It's stupid. It's silly. It's so bad, it's good. It's never like, this is just a good movie.
Yeah. And the thing is I think the biggest problem with movies is you just need to sell tickets. And you need to sell tickets to people who don't necessarily know what the game's about.
Well, I mean, we've had this discussion before, and this is actually a great segue to our next point, is that I don't necessarily think that you need to stay true to the game, but you need to have something that is relevant to the franchise. And I think that's going to be an interesting thing if this ever comes true. It came out, I guess, last week, a week and a half now, that Netflix may be partnering with Nintendo to do Legend of Zelda TV series. And a live action one. a lot of people kind of met this with fair trepidation.
I think it's people acknowledging that if not handled correctly, it could easily go really, really wrong.
Well, to be fair, that could be said about everything.
I think Zelda is a difficult thing to transition to TV. Like, compared to, like, Assassin's Creed going to a movie, like, that's a much, you know, easier to see path. I mean, the main character doesn't even talk in the games.
Yeah, and there are ways around that. I mean, there are films where, like, the main characters don't speak much. I guess famously, I mean, granted, it's not the main character, but it's the name of the character. Terminator doesn't speak a ton in the first movie. Punisher Warzone, for instance, had a character, the main character, Punisher, didn't speak for like the first 35 minutes of the film. And even when he did speak, it's not like he started having monologues and stuff like that. So there are ways around it. That being said, it's also a movie, which is a lot more compact. You can kind of get away with a lot of stuff in an hour and a half. If this is a TV series, if this is like a Netflix series, it's a like a 13-episode, hour-long thing, you can't really do 13 hours of your main character not speaking.
Yeah, no, I mean, Link's going to have to speak in the show, if Link's even in the show.
Yeah, I mean, then
it's
that's
possible that he's not.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to get around. You have to be creative, and I think it's going to come down to what they decide to do with it. I mean, one of the biggest hurdles right now to this is, one, well, it's Nintendo, so who knows how they are with their mind. The other thing is, it has no writer right now. So, right. I mean, this show is pretty much just a pipe dream. It's not even like if it had somebody, anybody attached to it, it would be more, you know, more realized. But yeah, like, it doesn't have to focus on, like, I think the Legend of Zelda franchise, and a lot of people say, you know, a lot of people go, like, it doesn't have a deep story, doesn't have deep characters. I'm like, yeah, it doesn't necessarily need that. That's what you would flesh out in a TV series.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has the framework to support deep characters. It has a really rich roster in its world of different creatures and societies and stuff.
The biggest problem that the Zelda franchise has is it almost resets every time. So.
Where do you start from?
That's actually a benefit, I think.
Yeah, because then you're not bound to any particular source material. You can just kind of do your own thing.
You can
just like
just
a new game would do.
Yeah, and it's the same thing I kind of said with Assassin's Creed, in that since Assassin's Creed kind of resets its time period every so often, you don't necessarily have to adapt any one game. You can just kind of like, we have the Templars, we have an assassin, we have this plot, and you just plop it down anywhere. And it's the same thing with Legend of Zelda. Like, you don't need to do Ocarina of Time, you don't need to do Skyward Sword. You can just do a Legend of Zelda, and all you really need is Link, Zelda, some former Ganon. You don't even necessarily need the Triforce, but some reference to it.
I mean, and you could even do it without them if you really...
Yeah.
Like, you could do it in, like, the aftermath of, you know, Ocarina of Time or whatever. Or, you know, like, the aftermath of Link defeating Ganon, what happens...
Oh, you can... There's a ton of ways you can do it. You can do it... You can set it against, like, one of the big wars they always talk about, and just have Link be somebody who shows up at the end of, like, Season 1. So the stories focus more on, like, the armies of these multiple camps, and not necessarily a single character. And I think avoiding focus on a single character would also benefit it, because... Ink, you know, I like Ink, but he isn't a well-defined character, which is good and bad, but he is a heroic character, and I do think a purely straight good guy would get kind of dry after a while. We're kind of so used to more complex characters on our TV shows now, you know, especially on Netflix with House of Cards.
Yeah, but keep in mind, too, like, Nintendo, according to the reports anyway, Nintendo wants this to be, like, a family-friendly show, so that's...
Oh yeah, it's gone.
Not out of the realm of possibility.
I mean, you see, and I think that's the other thing that people kind of took offense to is when they saw Family Frenzy, they just kind of freaked out. But The Legend of Zelda has always kind of been a Family Frenzy franchise in general. But I also think of stuff like Avatar: The Last Airbender, or The Legend of Korra, or even like the entire Timverse with Batman Animated Series and Justice League. Those were all Family Frenzy shows, but they dealt with deeper things beyond the surface level, while still being very mindful of the fact that this was a younger audience. Like, it wasn't like blood and guts. And I don't think you'd get that in The Legend of Zelda anything, because it's Nintendo. There's ways to do it, and there's ways not to do it. And this is always going to be a tightrope when you're dealing with this type of family-friendly stuff. Is because, you know, like, Pixar movies are great examples. They're aimed at kids, but they're usually smart enough and engaging enough for adults to enjoy them on a different level, but still enjoy it.
Yeah, I guess Netflix just need to be careful and make sure that they do something that they know people are not going to hate.
Yeah.
Well,
as long as they hire people who are passionate about, you know, Zelda games and stuff.
Well, I was about to say, no matter what you do, people are going to hate it.
Yeah, that's also
because
true.
People are going to hate any minor changes. Oh, Link's tunic is a darker shade of green than it is in any game. or he speaks too much, or he doesn't speak at all, or they got the wrong actor, or they should have cast an actress, he doesn't have to be white, or whatever. People are going to get upset about everything. And if this show does come to fruition, I think people are going to get upset about every announcement they make. Who's writing it? Who's directing episodes? Who's Zink? Who's Zelda? Who's Ganon? What is it going to be about? How many episodes? Like, what races are going to be in it? And I think that, to me, is the biggest issue, is, like, translating the world of Zelda into live action on a TV budget. Because I think one of the references they made was Game of Thrones, and you know, Lord of the Rings is another one, but those have a ton of human characters.
Yeah.
And The Legend of Zelda doesn't. Like, most of their races aren't close to humanoid.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Well, I mean, they're close, like Gorons and, you know, Zora, they're close-ish. It would take, like, a lot of makeup and or CG, but...
And that's the thing, on a TV budget, and it's not like, you're not talking about like one or two of them. You're talking about like hordes of them. I mean, and there are ways around it. Like, you can just have like an ambassador, like have like randomly have like one person from this race show up for like an episode or something like that. But again, I think you would upset fans there. And
yeah, I think this would upset fans too. But you could also reimagine these races as being human.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, ultimately, that's probably better for a budget and actually getting them across, because I think it would be better, and I guess that would be if, it would be better if they imagined them as different, like, different races, kind of like how Avatar, like, some people are influenced by, like, Asian culture, some are influenced by Indian culture, and stuff like that. Just have different races represent these different tribes and kind of keep within the spirit of that. But yeah, there's a lot of room to wiggle with this franchise, I think. And I think, much like Assassin's Creed, because there's so much wiggle room, but there's still kind of iconic elements, you can get away with a lot, and it makes a much better adaptation than having to be like, okay, like we kind of talked about this before, The Last of Us is kind of a, there's one thing you can adapt to The Last of Us. There's only that one game. You can create a world around it, but I don't think that's what people are expecting with The Last of Us movie.
Yeah.
So yes. What else is there? Is there anything else before we get to the big one for this week?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, it's been kind of a slow week.
Yeah, it's one of those. Yeah, it's one of those. So yes, the big saga for the week was the whole Peter Molyneux thing, which I'm not 100% caught up on. All I know is at the end of the day, he quit. He says he's going to quit giving public interviews. So do any of you have the backstory on this?
So the gist of it is basically Peter Molyneux, two and a half years ago, sets up a Kickstarter because he wants to make a game on his own terms. Fine. He... then has this curiosity thing that is like a mobile game, and the winner was some British kid, and he won the ability to have some control over the direction of Goddess, right? And it turns out that, so what happened, the way this unfolded first was the Peter Molyneux basically stepped down from the development of Goddess and handed it over to somebody who was a backer. They were a game designer, but they were a backer of the game. And this person was kind of candid in how, you know, the future of the game, and he was saying, I don't think that we're going to be able to ship some of the multiplayer features. Some of the combat is kind of looking kind of shaky. You know, he was being really honest about how the game was coming. And obviously people were upset because, you know, it's been 2.5 years and the game hasn't reached a point where features have been delivered and some features aren't going to be delivered. And then it turns out that Eurogamer spoke to the person that won this contest and he got nothing. He got flown out to the studio, and then after that, He had to maintain contact with them in order to make sure that he was kept in the loop, and even then he was dropped out of the loop. So then that's when, I guess, Rock, Paper, Shotgun went on full attack mode, because there was all these promises that they'd made that they didn't keep up with, and there was a person that was waiting to receive money and power from them that probably won't get it because features won't be put into the game, and yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, it's a very wide web. It all kind of shook out around the same time, because everybody's kind of doing interviews with him on like Wednesday or Thursday of this week, and then that Rock Paper Shotgun interview came out, and I think that's the one a lot of people have been focusing on. I think because it's one of those.
He took the gloves off straight away.
Yeah, and I think interview. He went about that the wrong way.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily mind hard-hitting interviews, but I think his big problem was he's trying to frame it in one of those gotcha things, and I hate quoting Sarah Palin, but he was pretty much, like, his first question was, "You're a liar, and I'm going to prove you're a liar," and that was pretty much the rest of the interview. It's like, this is what you said, and this is what you delivered, so this is a lie. And I feel like that was just kind of antagonizing the man, instead of kind of framing it in that you tend to overpromise and underdeliver. Which I don't necessarily think are the same thing as Zion. Like, you can have, like, why do you continue to have these grand ambitions and never deliver on them? Do you ever think about maybe underselling your game so fans don't get this off the expectation in their heads that you can never actually achieve? There were some good questions in there, but again, kind of being framed in this, I'm gonna catch you in this web. Like, he asked him about his Kickstarter, and you're a game developer, you've been in this industry for 20, 30 years, you should kind of have an idea of how much it takes to budget, you know, like how much to budget a game development. Like, why couldn't you have accounted for that? And he's like, we didn't get enough money and this and that. But he's like, you got more than enough money that you asked for on your Kickstarter. And that is a fair question, I think. I mean, I understand that game development isn't a very, you know, it's not a cut and dry thing. You can't say like this and that, but he should have had some idea of what to expect, and why wasn't he able to budget for that and the extra money he got? Like, what went wrong along that way? And I think that would have been a more interesting interview type, instead of just trying to say, okay, 2 years ago you said this, and that never happened.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, Peter Molyneux is such a strange case, because he's not malicious in any sense. He just, like, if anything, he's too passionate about what he does, and it kind of deludes, he kind of deludes himself. And I think that, you know, I think while there needed to be a tough interview about this mess, because it was a really big mess that he made for himself, I just feel like, I don't know, I think it's an important reminder to people who run Kickstarters that they need to make sure that all their expectations for how their project will turn out are realistic, and you know, and I think that it would be nice to see, like, more accountability kind of like this, just obviously not as aggressive for Kickstarters like that, because then maybe people will learn that we're not going to just sit down and take it if this stuff happens. Yeah, it happens, but you need to be told about it, not just for you to go, oh, well, sorry, it didn't pan out, like,
yeah,
when it's too late.
I think that, and I also do think that there should be a lot more transparency. I understand if you're a developer with a publisher, and that's different because they control that, they funded it. But if it's being funded by individuals, I do think that they should, because a lot of this all came out at the same time, like 2 years after the Kickstarter. Like, why weren't people being updated about this as the development was going on? Like, why didn't these backers know, like, this project, like, this, like, we're working on this and it might not make it? Like, give people updates over time instead of just, like, hitting them all at once with this. And then kind of going on the offensive when your vision didn't pan out and trying to say, like, you know what, it shit happens, essentially.
Yeah.
And Kickstarter has been an interesting experiment for this industry. I don't necessarily, you know, I think there's been more misses than hits, but there has also been tremendous hits out of it. So it's one of those things where it's not necessarily a failed experiment, but I do think that as consumers and customers, we should be more wary of who we back, what we back, and, you know, like, kind of keep track of who has and hasn't delivered for you so far.
Yeah, I think the, and this sort of comes back into, I mean, I have backed a bunch of Kickstarter products, because I can't criticize Kickstarter if I don't use it, I don't think. I think that Kickstarter is much better suited for products that get manufactured, because not only do you get a physical thing out of it, but it's a lot easier to find out whether something's going to go horrendously wrong on a project like that. And not only that, is they tend to have shorter turnarounds. It wasn't that long before, like, after the Kickstarter ended that people were getting them. So, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing. I think it should be focused on. And I don't want to dismiss games, but we've said this before on the show, and I think even we see this in the business side of stuff. Game development is still a very loose thing. Nobody has an exact science for it. Nobody can say, this is how you make a game. You go, you know, 18 months from here to here, everything kind of works. You kind of have an idea of how movies are made. Movies are filmed over a set number of time. They're edited a set number of time. And they're finished a set number of time. You kind of have a rough idea. You can do a movie in a couple of months if you want to. You can do a movie in a year if you want to. You can do a movie in 2 years if you're Zack Snyder. And I'm still waiting for Batman vs. Superman. But that's just Burton Age. But there's no exact science for game. There's nobody to say, okay, we can do this in 3 years, because look at the games that take 3 years. Like Assassin's Creed, last year, was still buggy when it dropped. You know, Destiny wasn't feature filled, and a lot of other stuff that worked. So there's no way to say, okay, you know what, we're going to make this game, it's going to take us exactly 12 months from today, we're going to have ask you for this money, and it's going to be this exact amount. Like, no, there's no way to know that, because nobody's figured that out. If anybody ever does, they're going to become a rich, rich person.
Yeah.
Or they're going to turn out of some of your games. And this is really, it's really not necessarily concerning, because it is an evolving and maturing industry, but it is sad, because we are kind of at the point where a lot of companies are kind of, I guess, making their games on a conveyor belt. I'm looking mostly at Ubisoft, where a lot of their games tend to be very similar in design, and they still can't necessarily get that down to a science where they can get these games out at a reasonable time and keep up the quality of their products.
Yeah. And they take those games take 3 years to make, apparently.
Yeah, and again, even with that 3 years, they don't necessarily come out fully cooked. So it's hard, especially if you're kind of one of those people who were a lot of these people were, Peter Molyneux included, a lot of people who worked in the industry with a publisher developer, and they kind of had somebody, you know, hitting them with the whip, like, okay, you have to have this done in 3 months, and this is going to be a next goal post in 6 months or something like that. And they kind of had that rigid structure of hitting those deadlines. If you're in business for yourself, you probably want to get the creative aspect correct and not necessarily, okay, we need this game out by the fall of 2015, so we have to do this, this, and this to make sure that it's in a condition to ship in that time. And I think sometimes that is something people don't account for when they start these Kickstarters, because it's like, oh, I know how to make a game. I've made them before, but you made them under the watch of somebody else. But yes, at the end of the day, as he changed his mind, I believe that he says that he's not going to give him press interviews. This is after having like 15 interviews in 2 days.
Yeah. He's told multiple people that he's not going to speak to the press ever again. So take that for what you will.
I mean, I don't think... I mean, it's great to have somebody in the industry who thinks large, who thinks grand, who thinks ambitious, but I don't think he should retreat from the press, but I do think he should probably not speak as much.
You need somebody to reel him in, at the very least.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people tend to have. You know, people hate them, but this was one of the reasons that PR people exist, because they know exactly what to say nothing.
Yeah. Yep.
where if you're ever seeing again, going back to American TV, if you watch the talk show circuits, a lot of those interviews are canned and very fake because it's stuff that they agree upon before they get on those talk shows. It's, you know, they get the questions, they get the talking points before they even agree to be on the show. And then they get it again when they get to the air and stuff like that. So none of that's natural because you don't want to say something that might trigger something. And I think in the other creative industries, and game is not the only one. I think if you ever follow like comic book industry people, or even like movie stars, and not like mega stars because they don't do any of their own tweeting and stuff. But like if you follow like B-listers and stuff like that, who try to interact with their fans, they too can kind of get in trouble for saying the wrong things or react negatively to certain people. So there's no there's no fast and easy rule about that. Okay, is there anything else you folks want to talk about before we wrap up?
Nothing I can think of.
No?
No? No. Okay. So, I have no... Oh, actually, next week should be a good one, I think, because we get the Order 1886.
Yeah, I was just going to say, actually. That's out on Friday.
And so is... the Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, which I'm not going to talk about on this show.
Why? Why is that, O?
Why is that? Because I don't know when you're going to get it.
Neither do we. So, you know, neither do Nintendo of Europe.
Actually, I think I might also have a new 3DS. Hopefully by next week, if Best Buy ever decides to ship out mine. So I can talk about that as well. And if I open up my PlayStation TV... and I think we'll probably hear more from certain companies this week. We'll see if things pan out, but who knows. Anyhow, for Jason, Daniel, and myself, this has been Duo Wilden.